Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. With a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you'll end up paying over $400,000 after interest. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your debts. Let me send you a powerful free CD. For your free CD, call 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Franchise Interviews, where for over 5 years we've been asking the franchisepreneurs to own one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show today. Franchise Interviews is celebrating 5 years and 250 shows with IFA President and CEO, Steve Caliaria, and also Scott Bundy, Vice President of Cafe to You Franchise Opportunity, with Terry Llewellyn, Area Representative for Cafe to You. And that's all coming up on Segment 2 of Franchise Interviews. So stick around because we got a great show.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand, the opportunity to take control of your future and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach?
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. The real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
Franchisers, are you looking to reach aspiring entrepreneurs looking to buy a franchise? Are you looking to reach a highly educated audience on franchising? For over 4 years, Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Check out our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys, and our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. Get 3 months of free advertising when you sign up for our one-year package. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919. That's 610-905-2919.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where for over 5 years we've been asking the franchisepreneurs of one one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. How are you doing today, Don? Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Marty. Doing great. How are you?
Good, good. Congratulations. A big day, huh? 5 years. Could you imagine?
Yeah, I can't believe how the time has gone, and We're at 250 shows. It seems like yesterday we're talking about doing the 100th show. And here we are
like
at
a big deal.
Here we are at 250 in our fifth year of doing this show. It's amazing. You know, 250 hours of franchise content and information and just you know, if people want to get into franchising, you really only have to come to this to franchiseinterviews.com and just invest some time and listen to some of the, you know, biggest names in franchising who we've interviewed over the years.
It's amazing. It would take 10 days, over 10 days, to actually listen to all the shows. Could you imagine that? So if you started with the first show and go to today's present show, it would take you over 10 days to listen to all that. You know, I mean, that's amazing if you think about it. I mean, all that content, you know, and you're right, Don. When we did our 10th show, I thought it was a big deal. You know, I was like, oh, my God, 10 shows. And I said, where the hell has the time gone? You know, so it's kind of incredible. So, but we have a great show today. I mean, we've been looking forward to this show for a long time. You know, you and I put a lot of thought into the guests that we want to have on this particular show because it's always a special show to us. And so today we have Steve Caldiera, CEO and president of the IFA. And when you look at his resume and his background, I mean, it's really quite overwhelming and a little bit intimidating. He certainly knows his stuff, but really looking forward to having him on the show. And we're meeting with an interesting franchise concept as well, Cafe to You, mobile cafe franchise. And I know you know a little bit about these guys.
Right.
You want to talk about them, or you want to mention anything about them, or
just, you know, that they're foreign based. They're
okay.
It's something that's different. It's new. It's exciting. They had over 120 locations in Australia, also in England. What, over 50? And I guess they opened up their first franchise in Oregon. So they're in the early stages here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. But it's always interesting when franchises have had success in other countries. And they're very confident that they can be successful here. We've had, we've discussed that on past shows, that it's not always a guarantee that certain franchises are successful in another part of our country or in another country will automatically be successful here. I guess a lot of due diligence and a lot of background checking and time and money investment go into the different studies involved to make sure it's going to be successful here. So it'll be interesting to hear their viewpoint on what they did and why they feel it's going to be a good, strong, successful brand here also.
Well, this is interesting, Don. I was, as you know, going for my doctorate degree, I have to read, they call them scholarly peer-reviewed articles. You know, a lot of research goes into them. Some of these articles that I have to read on a daily basis, sometimes they take a year or two to actually write and get published. This was an interesting one. The article is called Non-Traditional Generation, Franchise Systems Coming of Age with New Franchisees in New Venues. And it's by Joyce Mazzero and Suzanne Trigg. And it was just, you know, I'm reading it. I'm like, oh, my God, this is like a perfect segue into today's show. Listen to this. It talks about mobile franchise units. And the article, by the way, is very recent. It's spring of 2011. So it just came out, the study. So the growth of mobile restaurant franchises has been identified as a top franchise industry trend in 2011. It says mobile units, a rapidly growing segment of the restaurant industry that are attracting substantial media and consumer attention, and many franchisors are adapting their concepts to include mobile units. Many brick-and-mortar eateries have added mobile units in recent years, and more are expected to do the same, including national brands. Since in August of 2009, approximately 1 out of 8 consumers, 13%, reported visiting a mobile food truck in the preceding 6 months. Nearly a year later, twice as many, slightly more than 1 in 4 consumers, 25%, reported visiting a mobile food truck in the past 6 months. Although many non-traditional franchise locations can be as expensive as traditional locations because of high rental and other costs, mobile units are less costly than traditional franchise units, making them an attractive option for franchisors looking to achieve brand recognition while providing franchisees with a lower cost option to obtain a franchise. I have to send you this article. I mean, it really is fascinating. It's a nice segue into today's show as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's great information that you found.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense too, doesn't it, Don? I mean, instead of, you know, it was a long time ago we had FranSmart on the show, and it was the gentleman's name was Dan Rowe, and he said that we say a good location can overcome bad marketing, you know. And I always thought about the whole location factor, particularly with franchising. It's always a big thing. I know you've been dealing with this for a long time, and why not have the franchisor or the franchisee say, "Come to you," right? Come to the customer instead of you going
right
to it. You know, I mean, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? If you think about it. And over time, I've had a lot of students, and I never thought about this, asking me about the whole, you know, mobile concept, you know, food wagons and things like that. And I never really put much thought into it. And it makes a lot of sense to me. So I'm looking forward to having Cafe to You.
And also, Marty, a lot
today
of people are looking to, you know, supplement their income, have another income stream. Times are tough.
Good
maybe
points.
People aren't making
yeah,
as much. I would tend to think
yeah
mobile unit type franchises also, besides being a full-time franchise
mm-hmm
owner, but, you know, gives you a option to maybe do part-time or at least maybe
yeah,
starting out with
that
the franchise. So when you can, these type of franchises, maybe, you know, you do on the weekends or
mm-hmm
or so forth, you know, that's, to me, an attractive feature.
Yeah.
Not all franchises are like that, but some franchise systems you can start off part-time with them. And
yeah,
the franchisor is fine with that, to just kind of ease your way into it, you know, learn the system on a part-time basis,
mm-hmm,
prove that you can earn some income. But the overall goal is for this to become your full-time business and job. So that's another
exactly
interesting component of you know, the mobile type unit. You probably didn't think of that because I'm a little smarter than you, right?
I didn't think of that. No, that does. It makes a lot of sense, you know. You know, I mean, you know, you feel bad sometimes. You know, there's a lot of great concepts we do have on the show, but, I mean, some of them are a significant investment, aren't they? You know,
right.
You know, for good reason, you know, so it's certainly not for everyone, you know. So, I mean, we have, you know, thousands of listeners, you know, and, you know, sometimes when, you know, the startup cost is, you know, between, you know, $500 to $750, you know, it's a lot of listeners say, God, we're way out of range, you know. So there are some interesting concepts out there, lower cost types of opportunities that are available, where you could, I think, make significant money doing it, you know. And, of course, being it's a franchise, it is a system. You know, it has a track record. They've been doing it a while. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think this is great. I'm happy that we're talking about this on today's show. In talking a little bit about Steve Caldera, I can never, you know, it would take a whole show to talk about his whole background. Here's just one thing. It says his trade association experience includes serving as president and chief operating officer of the National Restaurant Association Educational Foundation in Chicago, Illinois, where he oversaw programs to develop, promote, and provide educational and training solutions for the food service industry. Prior to the foundation, Mr. Caldera served as Senior Vice President of Communications and Marketing for the National Restaurant Association in Washington, D.C. He just seems like a great person to kind of like run the ship or steer the ship for franchising, you know,
right,
just with his background and everything like that. So I've been really looking forward to finally getting a chance to talk to him on the show, you know. It's
and just hear his how he feels about the current state of franchising and where does he
mm-hmm
see the future in the next couple of years or 5 to 10 years. Be interesting to get his, you know, his insight on that.
Yeah, absolutely. He wrote a great article, too. I won't read it today. Maybe we'll save it for another day because you have so much information today. But it was called Small Business Lending, Key to Jobs. And it was November 6th article. It's fairly recent, but I mean, he talks about all the different things and what's going to be important to have franchising move forward. So,
right,
really good stuff. So, looking forward to that. And I know you had some interesting articles we've been attempting to get to over the last couple of weeks. What you got today?
Always the case, yeah. Well, our friends at Franchise Times Magazine, news affecting franchises. And it's interesting. A lot of times we're in this segment, we're mostly always trying to give information to help the franchisee and what to look out for with franchising and so forth. Here's something on the franchisor side. Taxation without residency. The U.S. Supreme Court in October refused to hear an appeal of an Iowa Supreme Court ruling in favor of the state's Department of Revenue, which KFC sued over a $250,000 income tax bill on royalties paid by Iowa franchisees. As a result, franchise systems could be hit with some large and complicated tax bills. Franchisors typically pay income taxes only in the state where they're headquartered, which is based on a rule that a physical presence is required for a state to levy income taxes. But in 2001, Iowa assessed the Kentucky-based KFC $248,000 in income taxes on royalties paid by KFC franchisees in that state over a three-year period starting in 97. Iowa argued that the franchisee-owned restaurants were constituted an economic nexus that could be used to satisfy the physical presence requirement. KFC disagreed, saying they were owned by franchisees. Courts, however, sided with Iowa. The Iowa Supreme Court ruled in favor of the state last year, and the case was appealed by the U.S. Supreme Court. The High Court refused to consider the appeal. Other states could thus take that refusal as confirmation that the economic nexus theory works in franchising. States eager for revenue in the midst of a brutal recession may well begin following Iowa's lead in assessing income taxes on any income franchises earn from franchisees, including royalties and sales of food or products. History tells us this is what they do in these states, says Scott Susko, global tax partner of the law firm Nixon Peabody. It's absolutely a perfect storm. States are broke. They're looking for revenue sources. Pretty incredible, you know? It's like...
It doesn't make you mad. I mean, when you're reading the article, you know, I mean, it's...
Like, what are they doing? Trying to bankrupt franchise systems?
The whole thing is like, you know, going after, you know, success, you know? I mean, it's horrible. I mean, it's just they keep putting obstacles
here
in the world
the
of
country,
franchise.
You know, the deep, long recession. The country's, you know, losing jobs overseas, trying to add jobs, and franchisees already have enough to worry about just opening, or really more on the franchisor side. I'm sure they have enough and expenses and everything. And here to all of a sudden have to worry about this, which can potentially stop their growth in franchising, which is really creating, you know, a segment of creating jobs. You know, people like a franchise and they're willing to invest in it. They do their due diligence. They want to open up. But if this keeps moving forward, if franchisors have to say, hey, whoa, you know, we have to address a major pending issue. You know, we don't know if we're going to have to be owed money, and, you know, we might not be able to give you the time and everything needed to open. It's just ridiculous. You know, how can states, if I was a president of the U.S., I would stop this immediately. The states, trying to find another revenue stream and going after franchisors, you know, and taxing them in different areas. I mean, this could be a huge story if this ever went anywhere.
Yeah. Also, they should reduce taxes, not increase. You know what I mean? It's. I mean, if you want to increase business, I mean, it's always been, you know, my philosophy. I think it's been your philosophy as well. Is to cut the taxes, you know, and kind of, you know, give an opportunity to catch up and catch your breath. Not. I mean, this is the worst time to do something like this. You know.
Says where the cost to a franchise will depend on the number of locations in a state and the number of states that follow Iowa's lead, but the real cost could be in coming up with tax returns for so many states. It's going to cost them an awful lot of money, says Greg Rubenstein, franchise attorney at Nixon Peabody. Imagine how much work we have in filing out and filling out our own taxes. They've got to potentially do this for 49 states. The good news is that Iowa only went back 3 years, even though there is no statute of limitations. And franchisors can deduct the tax they pay from their own state taxes, yet there's often a limit as to how far back franchisors can go in claiming such deductions, meaning franchisors may not always get the credit they're looking for and thus could face double taxation in some cases.
Wow.
So they say here, what are franchises to do? They can fight such bills and file lawsuits. They can lobby Congress to forbid the tax bills. Franchisors could.
But that costs money too, Don. You know what I mean? It costs time and it costs money. You see the frustration, you know, in the whole thing. So, yes, I mean, it is true that they might end up the franchisor might have end up winning. But again, I mean, that costs money too. You know, all these legal fees that are going back and forth, back and forth.
Right.
It's ridiculous and it's frustrating. I mean, you know, give the franchise time to create. You know, not deal with this stuff. You know, I mean, it really is very frustrating. I mean, I don't think you have to worry in your state of New Jersey. I can't see your governor. The way he is, you know, ever endorsing something like this, you know. So I
right.
think if you're in New Jersey, you're probably safe. Here in Pennsylvania, I don't know. It could go a different direction, you know, just one state away. So, but I mean, that's big, you know, and it's interesting because I would like to share this article with my students in marketing because we always talk about how, you know, the government can really have an impact, positive or negative, on your business, you know, and this is just, God, this is just one example, but that's pretty significant.
Yeah, it really is. It's just, it's pretty shocking in a way, I feel.
Yeah. We're supposed to be in a good mood on the anniversary show. That just irritates me listening to that article, you know. But it's important, though. I mean, it is important that, you know, our listeners know that, you know, and you and I have always spoke about what the good, the bad, and the ugly, you know, in
right.
franchising, you know, and educating our listeners. It's always been the mission, first and foremost. So, yeah.
Here's something, Marty, through entrepreneur.com, turning jocks into franchise owners. For years, professional athletes have traded in their big league skills to become major players in chains such as Burger King, Dunkin' Donuts, or KFC. Now the franchise industry is making a move to formalize its relationship with jocks looking to turn franchisee. This
mm-hmm.
is just with the continued growth of franchising, you know, nationally, internationally. And we're always, over the years, we've always been pretty good about reading the statistics on the show of how franchising is still growing even during a tough economy or just
mm-hmm.
a high percentage of total retail locations nationwide are in franchising. So it makes sense that you know, athletes who, you know, sometimes only have like a, well, I think the average career for a football player is like 4 or 5 years. And, you know, a lot
yeah,
of these kind
when
of
I
times,
heard that, I was shocked.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that. I was talking to you about this, I think, and when we had the guys from PAFI on the show, which I think you might even mention in the article, I was surprised that it was that short. I always thought that, you know, they all had these like long careers, like, you know, 10 or 15 years, and I don't know what the heck I was thinking, but not
yeah.
the case at all. I mean, that's not a long time at all.
I think across the board in the four major sports, I think the average career is like 4 years or something. It's the IFA, in a newer organization, like you just mentioned, the Professional Athlete Franchise Initiative, the PAFI,
mm-hmm.
plan to provide a centralized platform for pro athletes seeking to join the industry and for the franchisors wanting to connect with athletes. The IFA and PAFI say they'll develop an educational certificate program for sports pros and summits for both athlete franchisees and chains. Professional athletes are becoming more conscious about the longevity of their careers and realizing more effort should be placed in the planning for professional life beyond sports. PAFA founder and executive director Michael Stone said in a statement, Stone, an entrepreneur and a former NFL player, he was on our show a couple months ago, I think over the summer.
In July, yeah.
And I think his career was in that 7-8 year range. I think he was above the norm. He played on a few teams.
Mm-hmm.
He said the new
right.
group's approach is to educate the professional athlete community on the specific value proposition that the franchise model provides. Franchises have long been considered a hands-off way for pro athletes to go into business, becoming more involved once they retire from sports. And the article talks about a couple athletes who've been in franchising and have had success. So, you know, it makes sense. A lot of athletes are, have some money, and
mm-hmm.
they have to decide what to do. They're used to being successful. I would think one good option is to consider going into franchising where they don't have to have that learning curve, so to speak. They
mm-hmm.
you know, because of their success in sports, they can start out maybe owning 3, 4, or 5 units where someone typically might be tougher. They open up one. They might not do their second for a couple of years. These guys can get a few, you know, units open pretty quickly. And sometimes that's a success
yeah.
in franchising, especially with some type of food or restaurant franchise. Sometimes the key is, you know, owning and operating a few of them. you know, like Dunkin' Donuts, an athlete might be, you know, he can maybe own 10, you know, within a couple of years. You know, that's probably the advantage. They've made some money in being a pro athlete. And with something like this to pay AFI, they'll, you know, it's all positive. They're getting training. It's controlled, and I'm sure it's going to be successful.
Yeah, this is an amazing organization. It was one of my, for me, of all the interviews we did in 2011, this was one of my favorites because I think it was, you know, one of the most important. I learned a lot on this particular show. We had Tayoka Jackson was another guest from PAFI. He Don, he owns two IHOP franchises in the Washington D.C. area, and you know, it made a lot of sense to me. You know, for such a long time, I've been talking about veterans going into franchising because they have this amazing ability to follow a system. But you know, Michael mentioned on the show that, you know, athletes have a wonderful ability to follow rules. I mean, they've been trained their whole lives, if you think about it. I mean, Michael and Tayoka, I mean, both of these guys have been playing sports since they're like 8 years old, and they've been following rules, you know, and from right. the coach. You know, and you have to, when you get into franchising, you and I have said this a lot of times, you have to be teachable. You know, you have to be willing to learn. And that's not everyone out there. You know, I mean, there's a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs out there. They don't want to hear it. They just want to do things their way. And I think athletes do have this wonderful gift because they've been trained to listen to rules and instructions. You know, the coach says, okay, this is what I want you to do. Execute it. So athletes are fantastic at executing. You know, again, not every single athlete. You know,
I was just going to say, a lot of athletes,
right, not
they
every single
that.
One.
They take the ball and do what they want. The article ends, IFA President and CEO Steve Caldiero, who's coming on the show in a little bit, said the industry with more than 825,000 franchise establishment welcomes the opportunity to bring more professional athletes into our ranks. So,
yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's great. It's a great organization. You know, I would like to, you know, follow them, perhaps bring them back in 2012 and see how the organization's doing. I suspect it's going to be a big hit, you know. So,
and the article, great. Marty, has a picture of Shaquille O'Neal in the article. I don't think it mentions him in here, but maybe he's also somebody who's gone into franchising. He's a guy we should have on the show. But we don't want to tick him off. We'll ask him some real nice questions. He's a big guy.
Yeah, I saw him on TV last night. I said he's even bigger now, you know. And no, don't want to mess with him. So
I think he just came out with a book. Just came out with a book, I think.
He did. Well, that's what it was. In fact, he was in New Jersey yesterday, believe it or not, which is why.
Well, he's from Newark. I guess he was born and grew up in Newark a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, it would be great to get him on the show. You know, I mean, it was great even talking to, you know, someone like Tayoka Jackson. I mean, he played for Penn State, I think it was the Detroit Lions, and I've always been a fan, believe it or not, of the Lions. You know, they've never had much success, but, you know, I've always liked following the Lions back from the Billy Sims days, you know. So
Mike Stone played for the Patriots and the Cardinals as well. I think he played for the Giants briefly, too.
He played for the Giants as well. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, it's I know that's your team, isn't it?
Yep.
So, absolutely. So that's great. So good articles. Why don't we do this? I see our guests on have called in, so let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more franchise interviews.
Okay, you've got my attention.
It's a rare event in the world of franchising when an opportunity comes your way that can and will thrive in almost any economic environment. It's here, and its name is Big Mouth Advertising.
Big Mouth.
BMA is a leader in the exciting world of mobile media advertising. Why is mobile media advertising able to defy the economic cycles? The answer is obvious. In times of economic weakness, advertising is crucial for survival as the consumer dollar is scarce and the competition fierce. What is mobile media? It's the newest and fastest growing segment in the advertising world. Mobile media brings the message directly to the consumer. Mobile media goes to the consumer in traffic, where he eats, and where he plays. It quite simply cannot be turned off or thrown out. And when you join the Big Mouth team as a franchisee, you are joining the best. The Big Mouth Advantage is simple and successful. We invest in a strong infrastructure and in great people. As a franchisee, you have access to this entire system, including telemarketing, sales maximization, general and administrative support, design and creative services, even billing and collection services. All you need is a mobile media vehicle, a driver, and the willingness to create a financially sound and limitless business for yourself. There are no long-term leases to sign, no expensive build-outs, no office personnel to hire. You will be part of the Big Mouth advertising community and share its entire website and reception services, as well as its complete back-office services. This virtual office guarantees you the freedom to close those sales that will make you a success. We are so proud of our successes that we have voluntarily disclosed our revenue statements. Now, how many other franchises are doing that? Even in these historically rough financial times, Big Mouth Advertising has become a dominant force in the mobile media industry. Join the Big Mouth team and take the first step toward financial freedom. Please call Ron at 888-98-GO-BIG. That's 888-98-GO-BIG.
Big Mouth!
Franchise Interviews. For over 4 years, Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Check out our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919. That's 610-905-2919.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where for over 5 years we've been asking the franchisepreneurs of 1-1. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show today. Franchise Interviews is celebrating 5 years and 250 shows with Scott Bundy, Vice President of Cafe to You Franchise Opportunity, as well as Terry Llewellyn, Area Representative for Cafe to You. And Cafe to You is the USA's first mobile coffee franchise system. Hi, Scott. Hi, Terry. How are you doing today?
Hey, guys. We're doing great. Great to be on the show. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's our pleasure, Scott and Terry. Welcome. And joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson. I know, Don, you wanted to say good morning to Scott and Terry.
Thanks for coming on, Scott and Terry. Look forward to this show and hearing all about Cafe to You. I don't know if you listened to the first segment, but Marty and I have always found it interesting. Franchise systems started, especially in another country, coming here to the U.S. and what's involved with your strategy and investment to make the decision that it could be successful here in the U.S. So interested in hearing the Cafe to You story.
Yeah, Don, certainly appreciate you giving us the opportunity to be on here. And, it's real exciting times for us right now. And, we are the world's largest mobile espresso franchisor. We are new to the U.S., though we're not a new concept, of course. Our concept was founded in Australia, I think, as you guys know, in the year 2000. So we've been around for quite some time.
Yeah, we've had from the shows, Don, thinking back in our history, Action International, I think, was one of the franchises that started in Australia. And one of our very first interviews, I think it was our very first interview, was a franchise from Australia, Don. It was called Quick Curb, So, some amazing opportunities have come out of Australia, Scott and Terry. We were in the beginning of the show, I don't know if you heard it, we were talking about mobile franchise units. There was a great article I found, actually by accident. It was in the Franchise Law Journal. It was a recent article. And it just started off, it said the growth of mobile restaurant franchises has been identified as a top franchise industry trend
in 2011. It says mobile units are a rapidly growing segment of the restaurant industry that are attracting substantial media and consumer attention, and many franchisors are adapting their concepts to include mobile units. We thought this was very exciting, you know, so we're really looking forward to having you on the show. We've been talking about this for quite a while now. So we would like to ask our guests, where are you calling from this morning, Scott and Terry?
Yeah, we are calling from our U.S. headquarters. We're located here in Bend, Oregon.
Okay, I appreciate you coming on so early. I know it's a bit early over there today, so we appreciate you coming on the show so early in the morning. Hopefully you're drinking coffee, right?
Absolutely, we get our share.
So what is Cafe to you, and what is your involvement with this, Scott and Terry? Either one could start.
Yeah, so this is Scott. So, yeah, so Cafe to You, as I mentioned, we are the world's largest mobile espresso franchisor. Cafe to You was founded in the year 2000 in Australia. And, you know, at the time it was really run by a single owner operator, but he did grow the concept over about 4 years and had 12 licensees. He was running it as a licensing system. And then our now current owners had the opportunity to buy him out in 2004. And they saw what the potential was. And of course, this was in the Sydney area, population about 4 million. And so when they bought the company, they had a clear intent to franchise the system. And so the principal's owner spent a better part of a year, you know, refining the system and getting it to a point where they knew they could successfully franchise it, which they did in 2005, and continued to grow from there, of course. In Australia now we have 120 franchisees in Australia. 2006 we began developing the concept in the UK as well, and we're just over 50 franchisees in the UK, mm-hmm. and we had a new team member come on board, Derek Black, who was very instrumental in basically plugging and beginning to move Cafe to You toward more of an international brand. And of course, with the U.S. being one of the biggest countries here in the world with just a ton of potential, coffee obviously is very big here. We identified the U.S. as a target for future growth, and we actually our first foray into the U.S. was in 2010. We started by implementing a proof of concept vehicle in San Diego, and we ran that for about a year, and it was very successful, essentially, to bring this mm-hmm. very successful franchise concept in Australia and bring it over to the States. And see exactly, test the product, see how well it was received in this format. Because our model is really, it's different than any other coffee shop that you typically would see, whether it's a Starbucks. We are similar to, say, a Starbucks or a cafe in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, the type of quality product that we serve. But, you know, being a mobile concept, we bring it, and that's a real differentiator, we bring it to the workplace. And when we define workplace. The franchisees call this our non-traditional locations. So we strip retail
right.
out, and we go to industrial parks, business centers. There are going to be locations where there's not going to be, a cafe or high-quality espresso readily available.
Right.
We'll bring it directly to the workplace. But the San Diego proof of concept was very successful, and it basically allowed us to say, okay, we're ready to bring on a master developer, which, you know, that transpired July 1st is when we formally came on board here in the U.S.
Wow.
And
Terry,
Terry, sorry, Mario, I was just going to ask Terry.
Oh, good, good. You're probably going to ask the same question I was.
I guess Scott was just touching on a little bit, but if you expand on it, Terry, why is there a need for a concept like Cafe to You here, and maybe some other differences that make Cafe to You different from the competition?
Well, the competition is definitely our, you know, the drive-up espresso stands. What we find is a lot of people are They don't want to wait in line. They just get a mediocre coffee out of it. We'll come to your business and serve you right there. We get a lot of people that are all around 10, 10:30. They were going out, getting in their car, driving back to that espresso stand, getting their coffee, and then coming back to work. And they were taking orders from everybody, you know, carrying 5, 6 drinks. No need for that anymore. We'll come right to your business, service you right there, and get you muffins and pastries to boot, and you're good to go.
Man, the client can't ask for anything better, you know.
Right.
Good price, top quality product, and it comes right to you because everybody's always fighting time.
Yeah.
And people want convenience, and sometimes if there's bad weather, who wants to go back out, especially in, you know, state like Oregon or some of your colder weather states. So I think it's great to have that.
Well, exactly. We get the comments all the time of it's convenient, and then they taste the coffee and say, oh wow, it's even really good coffee because we've got a real high quality coffee, and they're shocked that it has both elements, convenience and taste good.
This is probably a good time to come in here in the U.S. because in my experience, I just find that, you know, service sometimes is not good. So I'm not surprised people are shocked that it's a good service and a good product. You know, sometimes you just don't get that anymore in life for some reason. Is that how you feel too, Marty?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Everybody's talking that, wow, hey, I should have thought of that. Oh, look at this. You know.
Well,
you should give it to them for free and, like, really
week,
shock them. Just, you know, really shock them, guys, and just give it to them for free.
Well, it was interesting because that's what I was saying last week, Scott and Terry, on the show, or maybe it was even 2 weeks ago as we were, you know, getting ready for you to come on the show. I said to Don, I said, damn, I said, you know, why didn't we think of this? You know, I mean, it's such an amazing idea. You know, it seems so obvious, yet no one has really done it, you know, particularly in a franchise concept. And the quality, I mean, again, it's from what I understand, the quality of the product is really exceptional. You know, I mean, typically when you think of like a food truck or something like that, you know, it wasn't typically known for its gourmet coffee, you know. So I think you guys are really, you know, you're satisfying a need that has been out there for probably quite a long time now in the United States.
Scott,
yeah,
what are some of the popular menu items, Scott?
Yeah, I think it's important to note in terms of the coffee culture in Australia, it's very, very strong. Essentially, you know, it's just an extension of Europe. And so they don't drink drip coffee over there, and they don't even know what drip coffee is. So they're all about a high-quality espresso product. And this mobile coffee phenomenon in Australia, it's not just us. We were really the pioneer, but we have, I think Australia's got over 180 coffee vans in Australia.
Wow.
So it's well known. And but even with that said, we were the only mobile concept to win one of the prestigious awards, the Golden Bean Awards. We won a bronze medal for the product itself, which speaks again to the high quality of the product.
Wow.
And that's the kind of feedback that we hear from the customers all the time. They're like, wow, it is better than Starbucks. You know, we hear that time and time again. And so, you know, Starbucks was great, I think, for the U.S. market in terms of being able to establish the fact that people will pay $3 or $4 for, you know, a quality cup of coffee. And so we're just taking that one step further and making it even more convenient to our customers. And, you know, so there's really, you know, we touched on that Monday through Friday. That's kind of the business model. We'll have these, you know, a route we'll establish for the franchisees, and they'll establish same businesses with the same stops. And the real business model for them is, you know, that we hand over to them is, you know, ideally they're targeting 20 to 30 stops per day, 6 to 10 tickets per stop. And so we define a very clear territory that they have that's protected. And really the other piece that we haven't spoke to about the business model is events. And the event business can be very, very lucrative for the franchisees, and we really leave it at their discretion if they want to do events. But as you guys know, especially in the summertime, spring, fall, I mean, there's no shortage of community events, sporting events. You know, you pull up to soccer tournaments, football games, these types of things, and we seem to be very, very well received at these types of events.
I imagine, yeah. I mean, and it's, and we'll face it too. I mean, the coffee's addictive. You know, I mean, again, I drink about 5-10 cups a day. You know, and if I don't, I get a headache. You know, so I mean, it really is very addictive. You know, it's not like a one-time sale. I mean, this is something that really becomes part of our daily habits. Wouldn't you say, Scott and Terry?
Exactly, exactly. That's it. He's our number one focus, and you know, the patient needs are just a complement to the coffee. But yeah, get them. Get them their daily coffee, and you
got
a
customer. Right. I was just going to say, Terry, what are some of the popular menu items?
Well, the most popular out here, it, my daughter owns the first franchise in the U.S. She's 19 years old, and she's out on her route every day. And so I get firsthand knowledge of what's going on. And the number one coffee drink is a mocha out here, but most all people have some kind of flavoring in their espresso. Very few just get what we call an Americano, just a regular coffee. And then out of the food items, probably the number one seller is a muffins. You know, we sell the blueberry muffins, banana muffins, poppy seed, that stuff. That's our number one pastry or food item.
And who, Scott, have been, I guess talking about the franchisee, who's the perfect candidate to become a Cafe to You franchisee? Who are the type of people that you're looking for?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And, you know, I think it's interesting to first note that the vast majority of our current franchisees are first-time business owners. You know, this is an owner-operator model, and so we're not looking to specifically find somebody that's owned their own business or has extensive business experiences. We'll teach that to them. But, you know, I think, you know, really key qualities for, you know, for a franchisee are certainly, you know, people that are very, very outgoing. And because this is a customer service business without a doubt, you know, because there is obviously a repetition to the service that they're providing. And so, you know, the folks that can really interact with their customers, they really get to know these guys. So they know each day they're seeing the same folks day in and day out. Obviously, you know, the franchisees need to really believe in their product. That's always important. But what we see is that that relationship. And I, you know, when I was over in Australia in June prior to us launching over here, and it was really neat. I got to spend some time with one of the franchisees out on their route, and you could just see that, you know. And I think for any of us, if you go into Starbucks, you might have a little bit of a relationship with one of the baristas, but you know, they've got a lot of employees there. And for, you know, for our franchisees, they've got real ownership in this business, and their customers are their livelihood. And so, you know, that's what we're really looking for, that person, not necessarily that has owned a business before, but you can tell they, you know, they enjoy networking and socializing with their customers, because that relationship will keep that customer, keep them a customer for life, most likely. When you top, just like you mentioned before, you got an addictive product on top of that. You know, makes for some really good repeat business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is interesting. I mean, again, this is a franchise, Don. I think you would agree with this, Don, that, you know, it could be, I say young or old, but, I mean, it could be someone who has retired, you know, and,
right.
You know, wants to do something, you know, keep themselves busy. Or, you know, as Terry was saying, you know, the 19-year-old, you know, daughter. I mean, it seems like it's a pretty wide gap, you know. Or
it is. I mean, our average, I think when, you know, we've done our polls, I mean, the average tends to fall within the 25 to 45 age range, although we do have a number of folks in their 50s that are very successful. We have a number of spouses that tag team, and so, you know, the husband may go out early on the route while the wife gets the kids off to school. And what's great about this business, you know, they typically start pretty early and wrap up by early afternoon. So, you know, like in any mobile business, you know, flexibility is a great, you know, it is a really key component to this business model, because they can wrap it up at 1 or 2, go pick the kids up from school, go take them to soccer practice.
Right.
So, yeah, we get all sorts. And, you know, originally it was much more, our franchisees were, we had a higher percentage of males, but we found in the past years we've had more and more females coming on board as franchisees, and they've been very successful.
Do you think, Scott, the current tough times, tough economy can help Cafe to You? People looking for another income stream, or just a lot of people out of work? I know, it can go both ways, where maybe people don't have as much money in the past, but you think it helps that, you know, the time that now you're entering the U.S. market?
I think that is a great point, because I think we're positioned really well. I think the timing couldn't be any better. I think in this environment, you know, there's certainly a lot of people out of work, and a lot of those people are looking, because they can't find a job, to get into, you know, potentially a franchise. And I think we fit real well into that demographic. You know, our investment, you know, being a mobile business is, you know, just over 100,000. So compared to a brick and mortar, the investment's a lot less. I think folks, because of this, you know, the economic environment we're in, are looking for lower risk opportunities. And, you know, mm-hmm. as we all know, coffee's a high margin product. So you're selling a high margin product. You have very little overhead compared to a brick and mortar. You have no long-term lease, and you don't have any employees. And so that makes, you know, that all makes for a potentially a great business model. And so we do think that in these economic times, and certainly with the trend that we're seeing in mobile food certainly just popping up, even here in our small town in Oregon, just in the last couple of years, we've seen just a huge trend in these mobile food vans popping up. I'm sure you guys have probably seen that in your mm-hmm. area of the country as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I mean, again, as you were saying, you know, Scott, coffee's not a new product. I mean, everybody knows what it is, you know, so I think that makes it so much easier getting involved with this type of business model. I'm curious about, like, what a typical day is like as a Cafe to You franchisee. You kind of hinted on some of the things, but is there a lot of, like, prep? I know, you know, obviously it's a morning business. That's important, but what's that like? I mean, how does the day begin, and maybe how does it end?
Yeah, this is Terry again. Yeah, for the typical day, what we're seeing is starts at 6:30 or 7 in the morning. We have a little trouble finding people that start earlier than 7. Usually 7's our starting time. That's what it is right now. Mm-hmm. Like Scott said, typically, well, like right now, my daughter's done at 2:30 in the afternoon. And definitely our morning is our big time, you know, catching people. You know, the premium spots are the 7 to 9, so you really – we really want to build your route around your best, biggest customers between 7 and 9. But then there's the people that up until 11:30 is still real good. And then if you – lunchtime is a little slow. We're putting some sandwich items on the truck and this and that to do the lunch crowd, you know, a little bit to satisfy them. And then, you know, along about 1:30, people start kind of getting afternoon nods and they'll need a cup of coffee. And we have gone as late as 3:30 or 4 in the afternoon, but typically is, you know, 7 to 2:30. She comes home, puts the van in the garage, plugs it in, cleans it, and restocks it and ready for the next day, and she has the evening to herself.
Wow.
Yeah,
what
and
about the tree? Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say, too, guys, what's, you know, I had mentioned flexibility, and when you talk about the typical day, you know, I think you could say, yeah, in general terms, a typical day would probably be 7 to, you know, 1 or 2. But, you know, we have – what's great about this model, we have franchisees that will work from 7 to 11 and they're done. They've established a really good route, and so they bang a lot of customers out in that 4 hours time, and they're satisfied with the income they're making. And then we have franchisees that will start on job sites at 4:35 in the morning, and they'll work, you know, really long hours. They'll do a lot of events. And obviously, you know, from a financial perspective, those guys are doing really, really well. So, again, it goes back to, mm-hmm. You know, we define success based on what that franchisee defines as success. You know, success for some person might be, you know, I'm done by 12 or 1, and then I can spend time with my family. So, you know, that's what, you know, certainly one thing that makes, you know, our model unique. And you know, it's pretty common in mobile concepts to have that kind of flexibility.
Yeah.
I'd love
yeah,
to end my work
so
day
important.
At 1 or 2 o'clock.
Yeah, we all would, I think.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting, guys, because I used to teach for a business school in New Jersey, and mostly it was night school, and that was my first experience with a food truck. Is, you know, the food truck would pull up; it knew exactly when the school would give a break, and I mean, I'm telling you, hundreds of people would go outside to that food truck. So this was even at night back then, you know, and a popular item even then was coffee, and I got to tell you, it wasn't very good. It was pretty, you know, it was stale coffee, but you know, people just needed that fix, you know, just to, you know, get them through the evening, you know. So it is interesting. It seems like there's a lot of opportunities for this type of franchise. I'm curious about training, like how that works. I mean, once someone, you know, says, wow, this is something I really want to get into, how does that typically work, Scott and Terry? What's involved in training?
Good question. So we do a pretty comprehensive training program. It's a 4-week program. Week one is training at corporate headquarters. Of course, a lot of that training is barista training, business management training. You go through the van, the generator, all the components of the van. And that takes you through week one. Now, week two, they'll take delivery of their van, and we give them a set of tasks to do under our direction, where they're on their own, they're stocking their van, they're not doing any sales at this point, and they may canvas some of the businesses with flyers, let them know that the next week they're going to be coming out and introducing their concepts. And then weeks three and four, this is a really critical piece of our training program, and it's what we call the acceleration program. And the acceleration program, we actually send out what we call a franchise development manager, or FDM. And a lot of these guys have been very successful franchisees, and now they're working for corporate as FDMs. And they'll take, you know, the biggest, you know, you can ask probably any new business owner what's the thing they fear the most, and a lot of it's, you know, going out and cold calling or getting new customers. You know, that's the, you know, oftentimes the biggest fear. And so we try to eliminate that through this acceleration program. So for 2 weeks, we actually give the franchisees a $400 a day guarantee. How nice is it that, you know, every day in the first 2 weeks you're gonna get a $400 check? Now, what we'll do,
right,
when we start this program is give away a lot of free product. What better way to, you know, to mm-hmm. introduce yourself than to give away the product and then allow them to be able to taste it, test it, and understand this concept. The biggest, you know, our biggest hurdle here in the States is this is a brand new concept. So we, you know, the biggest learning curve for folks is just educating them on what it is we do. You know, some people think we're, you know, this ice cream truck that's just going to pop up from time to time, but no, you know, it's very structured. We're going to agree on a time every day of the week to be there for your employees. And so through this 2-week launch, essentially, the FDM is teaching the franchisee how to make those introductions, how to build your route. And so ideally, by the end of that 2 weeks, the franchisee is doing $400 a day on their own. And we've been successful in doing that. We implemented this program, gosh, probably about 3 years ago, because what we found was just based on the personality of the franchisee. You know, you have some folks that were very sales-driven. And they were able to on their own, before we had this program, they were able to build a route very, very successfully, very quickly. And but also we had other folks that turned out to be great franchisees, but they just needed that extra help at the beginning to help show them how to get their customer base. And so that's when we started this program. It's been really successful for us and really gets the franchisees off to a fast start.
All reasons.
Yeah.
And advantages of why people invest in a franchise, all these things, training. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Scott, people are nervous starting up a business, especially during tougher times and marketing. But that's, you know, you have a system in place to cut down on the nerves, and they can just concentrate on just following the system and what your process is for them to be successful. So those are... That's why Marty and I are in franchising. We just love that type of model.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Scott and Terry, we have about 2 minutes. What's the best way for our listeners to get more information on becoming a franchisee? Is there any websites they can go to, any numbers they should call?
Absolutely. CafeTU.com is our web address, www.cafetu.com. FADU.com, and we have a tab on there for franchise opportunities, and folks can go on there and learn all about our concept. There's a lot of good information in there. We have a lot of videos. You can actually see some franchisees day in the life kind of videos, which are very educational. And certainly there's an area there to request more information for any folks that might be interested in learning more.
That's fantastic. I want to thank both of you for coming on the show today. I think Don and I both agree this is an amazing franchise opportunity, isn't it, Don?
Oh, yeah, not a doubt.
And again, we wish we thought of it, but you guys did first, so.
We have to move to Australia, Marty, and that's where our minds, our think tank will kick in.
Exactly.
We live in Australia.
That's what it is, yeah. So I want to thank you again, Scott and Terry. You've been a fantastic guest, and wish both of you a happy Thanksgiving. And we'd like to invite you back already in 2012 as we watch you guys continue to grow.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Marty. Thanks, Don. You guys take good care.
You too.
Thanks,
guys. Great
Scott
job.
And Terry. Wow, that's a great concept, Don. I love that. You know, it's just there's a lot of things I like about that particular model, you know. So fantastic.
Keep things simple,
so,
you know. Sometimes the simple
is what it is.
Thing.
It's simple, you know. Those are usually the best ideas, particularly in franchising, you know. So great. So we got Steve Caldiera coming up, and we'll be right back with more franchise interviews. Thanks, everyone.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand? The opportunity to take control of your future and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach.
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. The real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
For your free CD, call 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911. 1-800-933-2911.
Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise Interviews. For over 4 years, Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Check out our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919. That's 610-905-2919.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where for over 5 years we've been asking the franchisepreneurs who own one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. And today, Franchise Interviews is celebrating 5 years and 250 shows. And right now, Don, we're finally going to get to talk about a topic that you and I are both very passionate about, and that's veterans and small business ownership. And according to a recent Small Business Administration study, Veterans in the private sector are at least 45% more likely than those with no active duty military experience to be self-employed. And today we have the honor of meeting with Dan Benton, who is a West Point graduate who retired from the U.S. Army after 34 years at the rank of general, Lieutenant General, and now he manages an international and domestic franchise development for Global Franchise Group and Great American Cookies. And we're also meeting with Dan, and actually it's Sean Falk, and a former U.S. Marine infantry officer who served for more than 8 years in active duty and reserves, including tours during Operation Desert Storm. Hey, Sean and Dan, how you guys doing today? Welcome to the show.
Doing great, thank you.
That's great. It's great to have both of you on the show. And joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson, and I know, Don, you wanted to say hi to Sean and Dan.
Thanks for coming on, guys. Appreciate you know, the opportunity to speak with you both. As Marty said in the intro, it's just something that we're very passionate about, franchising in general, but for people like yourselves and your background, it looks like it's a perfect fit for franchising. And, you know, you guys can be the mentors and leaders of people coming back to, you know, from active duty and looking for a business opportunity. So I'm sure a lot of people will be listening to the show.
Outstanding.
Yeah, this is a topic that, as Don was saying, Sean and Dan, I mean, it is very close to our heart. This was last year I had my first publication on veterans and franchising, and I got to present the topic in Athens, Greece, and also at George Mason University. So it's something that we've been studying for a very long time now. I thought that we could dive right into it and, you know, just start off. What are some of the obstacles facing veterans as they exit the armed forces?
Well, this is Sean, by the way. I think one of the obstacles compared to like when I got out back in the early 90s, mid-90s, is that, you know, we had Operation Desert Storm, and it was a relatively quick conflict. So, sure, we had veterans coming back, but there wasn't as much of a job issue back home as there is today. But today,
right.
You know, we've been in a conflict that's been almost 10 years now. And we've got tens of thousands of veterans coming back that, for the most part, haven't had a lot of peacetime experience. They've had wartime experience. And there's some employers out there who don't think that they're bringing skills, but they actually are. They're bringing incredible leadership skills back. They have been able to operate independently with small units. They've made decisions about people and things and assets all by themselves without somebody else breathing down their neck and telling them exactly what to do. So they've got a lot of experience to come back and run an organization, especially a small business.
That's a good point. You know, and now it's tough because of the bad economy and problems with lending. But the flip side is with more experience overseas, they're probably even better qualified. You know, maybe because the wars have gone on so long, to be in a position if they could. You know, do that type of work and have that type of leadership and skills and experience. I would think running a franchise is pretty simple. No business is easy, but so you have the good and the bad right now going on. The tough economy, tough lending, but so many qualified people. It gets Marty and I angry because we've read so many articles, Marty, over the years about veterans and franchising. It's such a perfect fit. I really wish there was more incentives and programs that our government and other, you know, the IFA is doing a great job. We have, you know, the Steve Caldera coming on later, but more has to be done to, you know, to get these people jobs, period.
Right. And, you know, one of the things I like to say is the United States military, I think, is the perfect example of a franchise system. Here's a system where they've already figured everything out.
True.
They bring you in. They want to train you their way. And if you do what they ask you to do and how they ask you to do it, you're going to be real successful and you're going to reap rewards. Well, a franchise system is the same way. Like Great American Cookies, it's been around since 1977. We figured out how to bake cookies, how to pick the right locations, how to market the product. We're going to bring in a young veteran. He's going to be able to follow the system that he gets trained on. And as long as he goes out there and execute, because that's what he's been doing for the last 5 to 10 years, is executing a system, he's going to be successful. We really don't need him to know how to bake cookies and roll pretzels and stuff like that. We need them to come in with a work ethic and the leadership and a will to win and that desire to make things happen. That's what's going to make them successful.
Yeah, and if you speak to, you know, we've been doing the show now 5 years, Sean, you know, and that's why we wanted you guys on the show, because we think it's a special show. But it's always been a common theme, right, Don? I mean, for,
right,
you know, 250 shows, the franchisor always says, you know, we're looking for someone who can follow a system. And there's not really a lot of people out there that can follow a system. John Hayes says that franchising isn't for everyone, and it's probably not for most people, because they have that difficulty in following that system, which is what became my obsession in veterans going into franchising. It did seem like a perfect fit for me, and a lot of the information,
right,
I found, you know, supported that information, by the way, you know. So
yeah, I think they definitely, they have a leg up in the way of following something. And so, like, what we're trying to do that's different, the IFA, the International Franchise Association, and more specifically Great American Cookies, is we're trying to give a discount to the initial franchise fee to further incentivize these young men and women to come back into franchising when they get out of the military. So our discount is 40% off of the initial franchise fee. And in order to be a member of VetFran, which is a committee within the International Franchise Association, you have to offer your most aggressive discount to veterans. And then you can be a member of that organization. There's a lot of organizations out there that are doing it, and ours is very aggressive with a 40% discount.
Part of the issue, guys, is here we have qualified people, you know, and veterans coming back. So there's no question as far as the work ethic and you know, the leadership, the experience, and in running a franchise. The problem is, you know, the heroes coming home to our country, because of their sacrifice, sometimes their net worths are low, and they haven't been able to have the same earning potential of someone just, you know, just working here in the U.S. So even though there's, I feel still more has to be done. A lot of times, and I also specialize in franchise financing for the last 13 years. So it's great to give and, you know, to have a franchise fee discount.
Mm-hmm.
But I think still more has to be done. Maybe not from the franchisor, but other you know, programs nationally, because a lot, mm-hmm, of times the veteran doesn't have the collateral or things needed to try to secure a small business loan, or maybe doesn't have the family that can help. There are a lot of,
right,
good, you know, lower investment size franchises, but, you know, a lot of good franchises cost in that, you know, 150 to 250 range. So that's sometimes where it's tough for that person to get into franchising. I mean, I wish there were better programs. I get calls from, you know, veterans every week. You know, would love to be able to see more in business and also succeeding.
Sure. You know, there's two things in there that you said that I'd like to comment on, and one of them is other people kind of getting involved and having more systems. And I can't specifically speak for other members of the IFA, like some of the supplier members, but
right,
even the suppliers are offering like their first order at a discount, or, you know, with no markup. So there are other people that are trying to get in and give as much assistance in the beginning as possible to get their foot in the door and to get them off the ground. And then the second thing that you mentioned in there was about money saved up. I think you're right that there are some people that come back from the military, and maybe they have circumstances at home. Maybe they left a family behind and they still have to completely support. Maybe they're the sole breadwinner and stuff like that. So those are obviously difficult situations. But at the same time, there is an opportunity for them to save significant amounts of money while they're deployed, because, one, they don't have a chance to spend it because they're in battle, but they also get some combat pay in there, and they get some dislocation allowance and stuff like that. So there is sometimes people who are coming back with kind of a nice stash saved up. It's not the 150 that you're talking about, or the 250, but it's definitely enough to put the down payment on something, maybe use the Patriot Express loan with the SBA program, and you know, get some help that way to get everything kind of shooting in the right direction.
That's a good point with the SBA. I think there should be a program,
yeah,
where no collateral is required. Just come up with a down payment,
right,
you know, maybe less than the normal down payment on a new franchise business, usually 20% to 30%. Have a veteran put down 10%, no collateral required, and have a certain minimum credit score. And as long as that veteran's approved by the franchise system, hey, you know, they get the funding that's needed. Something like that has to be done. Because right now, too much emphasis on like if they're investing in a food franchise, you have to have food experience. It has to be at least 50% collateral and a 700-plus credit score. And,
Like, right. You know, no one's going to have all that. And, no. You know, veterans who've done their sacrifice and put in their time, now looking to work, is willing to work hard, roll up their sleeves, get to work, because there's a very high chance it's not going to be from lack of effort and experience, like I mentioned before. But there has
to
be more. The SBA is the perfect program to do this, but it doesn't.
Right. You're exactly right. They're the kind of guys that are going to come back, and they are going to roll up their sleeves, and they're going to work hard. They're used to these 20-hour days working in the sun. I mean, so they're going to come back, and they're going to put every ounce of energy they have into making a business successful. And I think that is a big difference between a veteran and someone who's, a civilian who's been back here and maybe doesn't know what they're doing in life and wants to take a chance. And the veterans, I think, they bring so much more experience to the table because of their leadership that they've had so far.
They're going to say, what's this, a 12-hour workday and I have air conditioning?
Right.
This is a no-brainer.
Yeah, this is a cake job.
Well, it's interesting, Sean. You've been successful in franchising. It sounds like you're up to, like, was it 10 franchise businesses now in several states? Did you want to talk a little bit about that as far as, like, which ones you got into and what your experience has been like owning 10?
Yeah.
I mean, because it's much more complicated, of course, than running one.
Right. Well, when I got out in 1994, actually 1997, once I got done with my reserve duty and everything, I decided to go into corporate America. I always wanted my own business, but I didn't know if I was completely ready yet. So I went into corporate America, ran a real successful business, learned more about profit and loss and all that stuff. And then I decided that I was ready after about 3 years. And so I opened up my first cookie concept in 1998 and then went with pretzels. And so now I've got four Great American Cookies, three pretzel makers, I've got two Mrs. Fields cookies, and then a Salsarita's Fresh Cantina, which is a fast casual Mexican food concept. And I'm in three states right now, Michigan, Ohio, and Kentucky. We're actually expanding into Tennessee next year with a couple more locations in cookies and pretzels. And so I think, a perfect example of how the military has helped me. I don't know if all our listeners will understand, but I went from a fire team to a squad to a platoon to a company, and I'm trying to work on the battalion level, and that's that unit growth of understanding what it takes to not only run and operate and be the main person in a unit, but then how to expand and be the leader of a bigger unit and a bigger unit, and then build a support team underneath you with an operations person and an executive assistant and all these things along the way. So you need to know how to tier those things along the way. And really, with cookies and pretzels, for example, I mean, the operations are relatively simple once you learn them, and that is why it can be replicated so well. And I think a lot of concepts out there, a lot of franchise concepts are like that, that, again, the franchise system has already figured out how to do everything. So if you go in there and you learn it and you execute it, that's what's going to make you successful.
Wow.
Dan,
well,
I have a question, Dan, for you. Which was the easiest, basic training at West Point, being a lieutenant general in the Army, or having a high management position for a large company?
I think we lost Dan, Don.
I'm not sure if Dan is connected.
Oh, that was a great question.
Yeah, but how about the industry, though, Sean? I mean, what was it about that particular industry and those? You know, there's so much out there to choose from today. Don and I say it's probably more difficult than ever to make a choice as far as what franchise system you're going to go with because there's just too many choices. What led you to make this decision to go with these systems that you selected?
Well, yeah, I always liked food, number one. I mean, not just to eat it, but to make it and everything. I always kind of liked doing that growing up. But I think when you try to figure out what you want to do in life, I think you can use some skills that you maybe learned when you were in high school or before you went into the military. Maybe you worked for a heating and cooling guy, and maybe you want to do something like that or a plumbing system, or maybe you want more of a service-oriented operation compared to, you know, a mall-based or a food or selling cell phones, you know, whichever it is. So I think that you can kind of choose by just knowing a little bit what you're interested in doing because, again, it ends up being just executing a system. It doesn't. You don't need experience in selling cell phones or making signs or selling food. You just have to come in and learn.
Well, that's interesting. What about the Great American Patriot Program? What's that all about, Sean?
Yep. Well, on our we have a website, greatamericancookies.com, and on the bottom we have a link to our Great American Patriot program, and that's kind of what I was explaining earlier, where it'll talk about that 40% discount on our initial franchise fee. It's normally $25,000, so you're going to get 40% off. And it'll also it'll have a information on there on how to sign up to get more information. You can get it in a webinar where you can just go online and see what's happening and see what they're talking about, or you can ask to have one of our development representatives call you back and talk person to person with someone and get all your questions answered right away. And the Great American Patriot Program was our first step into offering veterans an opportunity, but we've also expanded it into our Pretzelmaker brand and our Marble Slab Creamery brand. So we believe in it. We've had a lot of interest in it. So we want to make sure that the opportunity exists across all our brands.
So you're also, Sean, with Global Franchise Group, along with Dan?
Well, I'm a franchisee with Global Franchise Group. I own the store, so I don't work with them, but Dan works with them.
Not corporate, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a corporate guy.
So it sounds kind of obvious, but why did GFC Management start this program then, Sean? You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think they saw the opportunity out there to find someone who is going to come in and execute that system. Like you were saying a minute ago about there's some people out there who franchising ends up not being right for them. They think they can either do it better or what corporate says it doesn't work for them. You know, so we have those franchisees as well. You know, some of them who just kind of bucked the system along the way. And sometimes, you know, they have great ideas, but other times it almost seems like they make it harder for themselves. If they would just execute the system, they would be so much better off. So, you know, and me talking to our franchisor, and they saw my success, and I do preach talking about the system. I say the system's there. Execute it. Just follow along. And I'm not saying that you just have to be a sheep and just do whatever they tell you. I question them at times. I challenge them at times. I say that I don't think that's going to work. And we work together to try to make changes. So I'm not saying that you have to come in and just be blind and walk along the way. But I am saying that that person, like a veteran, who comes in and understands that it's collaborative work, working together to make things better, I think that is the person that they're really looking for. So they saw an opportunity in offering it to veterans, and with the programs that are out there with the IFA and the VetFran system that's out there, knowing that there's tens of thousands coming back every year right now, we saw an opportunity to take advantage of people who are going to be successful.
Wow. So what should veterans consider when contemplating franchising, then, Sean? What would you say to them?
Well, I think they should consider, like what we were talking about earlier, kind of what they're interested in the first place. Definitely do a lot of due diligence. Make sure that you understand what you're getting into. Ask a lot of questions. I would encourage them to ask if in the system that they're interested in, like Great American Cookies, ask if they have veterans in their system already and try to talk to them, because I think a veteran talking to a veteran gives a whole different perspective on things and an understanding of what it really takes to be successful in that system. And so ask that question, and then you got to know your finances, and you got to know what the qualifications are, and that's part of the due diligence of knowing what you're getting into.
That's a good point. Just speaking to franchisees in general, too, just as try to speak to as many as you can. Do plenty of due diligence.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a lot of effort from the development team of a franchisor to say, hey, here's a list of franchisees that you may want to call and find out about our system. Well, I think if a veteran's coming in, they ought to say, well, are any of these veterans? And if not, can I talk to a veteran? And I think they have a whole different language that they communicate on. And I think that they can get a different picture and a more accurate picture that relates to them a little bit more.
It's also good to see so many franchise systems part of the VetFran program.
Exactly. Yeah, we have many. I think there's 1,200 now that are participating in the VetFran program. So a lot of people are jumping on board and they want to do it. You know, Great American Cookies, we've committed to hiring 150 veterans before 2014, either in positions in our stores or as franchisees. And what we'd really love is to have them as franchisees. we think that they'll be successful running a business and making our system great. And think about it, if they come in and they open up a store, say we got 150 vets who open up a store, they're going to employ anywhere between 6 and 15 people maybe. So there's a nice jobs growth plan right there. Give the veteran an opportunity to open up a business and most likely run it successfully, and he's going to provide, he or she's going to provide hundreds of jobs along the way to a lot of people.
That's a nice incentive program right there. Any veteran opens a business, and even additional incentives to hire one or more other veterans.
Absolutely, absolutely.
No, but it's, you know, so I think that's a no-brainer. It's just frustrating programs like that are not in place. Is there anything else, Sean, you want to talk about the IFA and VetPran as it relates to GFG management?
Well, if you guys got some of the notes in the beginning, IFA has pledged to do 80,000 veterans before 2014 as a whole of all the people participating in VetPran. And again, that's people coming into the franchise system as a franchisee and as an employee, either in their own organization of a franchisor or managing a store. You know, so what we're trying to do is match everybody together. And even I was at an IFA event last week, and I said, you know, where is there a list of veterans specifically? Instead of going to one of the job boards and just searching for people and maybe finding out that they're veterans, I want to go right to a veterans board and find out more information about these guys and gals who are looking for jobs and who are going to this particular area back home, and they want either a job or they want a franchise, and we're gonna help them get in there.
And like any small business owner, just don't think because you're opening up Subway, it's going to be simple. It's going to be easy. Just put the sign out. It requires hard work. I'm sure that's everything you're passing on to your fellow veterans with no matter what the franchise, whether it's food, non-food, service, kiosk, mobile, it's all hard work. There's no shortcuts.
Yeah, you know, the Marine Corps birthday was a couple weeks ago, and the Commandant sent out a message to all the Marines, and they said something about, you know, we want to remain America's premier fighting force, ready to take on all challenges that face us. And I would say the same thing about veterans getting out of the military. They're ready to take on all challenges. So, yeah, it's hard to open up the Subway or a Great American Cookies or a Fast Signs organization. But you know what? They're ready to take on the challenge and make it successful. They're ready to work those long hours. They're ready to work hard.
In a lot of ways, probably a better work ethic than your average American. I think it's safe to say that, right?
I think so, yeah. They've been put through the ringer several times. They come with a little bit of a different work ethic, definitely.
Right.
The study that was done, Sean, by the SBA, it mentioned that at least 45% of, I guess, veterans are more likely than those with no active duty military experience to be self-employed. Why do you think that is, and what's the explanation for that?
Well, I think one thing would be, as I mentioned a long time ago in the beginning of this interview, that they have been out there running a small unit operation very independently. You know, again, they may be a platoon leader or a company leader, and they're out there by themselves. They're making sure all the people underneath them have food and ammunition and supplies and all their equipment's taken care of. So, I mean, they have these people and things and these assets that they need to care for, keep inventory up. I mean, they've given themselves the opportunity to do everything that they would need to do in a small business. And they've done it in the small unit operation. So I think they kind of like that independence, and they like being in charge, and they like knowing that they made a decision and they're going to go out and execute it. That sounds like small business to me.
And managing people on a more deeper emotional, mental level than what you'd probably have to get into with employees.
I mean you have to motivate them on a whole different level. And I think they have to figure out ways to motivate, to coach, to push, to make people get outside their comfort zone sometimes. You know, so they've got all kinds of different things. They're dealing with people on an emotional level. They've left their family back home in the military. They've maybe had a person right next to them die because of the war. You know, so they've got all kinds of different things that they have to focus on. And I think it actually, they may come back thinking, it's probably going to be a little easier to just run a business, to just work, like you said, 12 hours a day in air conditioning and not have to worry about death or blisters or guns jamming up in the sand. You know, so I think they're thinking that this is simple.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, they really are a unique type of entrepreneur when I'm talking about veteran Sean. I mean, again, you know, you mentioned something also as well. I think that they're also very teachable. They're open to learning. That's what I found in my research anyway, more than, let's say, the average person, you know, who, let's say they've been working in corporate America for 20, 30 years, and they're not as open to learning new things. So that was, it was one of the interesting things I found in my research as well, and also the element of taking risk, because, of course, there is some element, right, in taking risk, I guess, in joining the military to some extent. I also found that some who have served in the military for, you know, it's 20, 30 years, sometimes they have what's called post-retirement anxiety. They, you know, they're still young after they get out of the military, and they don't really quite know what they want to do at that point, and found that, you know, franchising would be a good fit for a lot of those as well.
You know? Well, and you mentioned a minute ago about how they're real teachable. You know, in the military, we train nonstop. Even when we're in war, we're training during our downtime. We're going over tactics. We're reinforcing the things that we've learned at boot camp or at leaders courses and stuff like that. So we're always training. It never stops. And that's why if they come into a business and they start running their own business, not only are they teachable in a franchise system, but they're always kind of focusing on their operation and making sure that their staff understands exactly what they need and expect and want out of the job that they're doing. So it's a nonstop process in the military.
Wow, that's interesting. So what's the best way for our listeners to get more information, Sean, on all these different services? Any websites you want to plug or any numbers that you can give out to give our listeners more information?
Yeah, once again, our website, greatamericancookies.com. And you can go there and you can find out about our Great American Patriot program. And then, you know, if you're not interested in Great American Cookies and you're interested in other veteran programs, I think you can go to the International Franchise Association website. I'm not exactly sure of the website address. But you can also go to vetfran.org. I think it is. It's either org or com. Vetfran. V-E-T-F-R-A-N. Yep, just like veteran franchising. Vetfran.com. So that'll also give you kind of a list of participating franchisors out there who are involved in this and who are excited about having veterans come into their system.
Wow. That's amazing. We'd love to have you come back on the show, Sean. There's just so much more to talk about. I'm glad that we got to talk to you on this particular day because this show is special to Don and I. You know, is doing the show 5 years and 250 shows, and you know, and want to thank you also for, you know, protecting and serving our country, because if it wasn't for guys like you, you know, we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now. You know, so
thank you. I appreciate that.
We have the highest respect for you, and you have open invitation to come on our show anytime.
Call me back anytime. I'll be there.
Real good job, Sean. And I still would have liked for Dan answer my great question I had before.
Maybe you're scared of him.
I think he's happy with everything he's doing, and they've all been challenges, but he accepts the challenge.
Fantastic.
Thanks
and,
again.
Have a happy Thanksgiving as well, Sean.
You as well.
Happy holidays.
Thanks so much.
Again.
Right, that was great, huh, Don? Great show.
Yeah.
Why don't we do this? We'll take a quick break, Don, and we'll be back with Mr. Steve Caldera on Franchise Interviews.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand, the opportunity to take control of your future and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach?
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know, the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. the real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
Franchise Interviews. For over 4 years, Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Check out our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919. That's 610-905-2919.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where for over 5 years we've been asking the franchisepreneurs one on one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed of owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. And we have a great show today. Today, Franchise Interviews is celebrating 5 years and 250 shows with IFA President and CEO, Steve Caldiera. And as President and CEO, Mr. Caldiera works with the IFA Board to set the direction for the organization's strategic priorities. Hi, Mr. Caldiera. How are you doing today? Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Marty? Pleasure to be here.
I'm doing well, Mr. Caldiera. Nice to have you. And joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson. And I know, Don, you wanted to say good afternoon to Steve.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. We appreciate it. We've been looking forward to this ever since we heard you were coming on the show. Marty and I are such big fans of franchising. I've been doing the show, as you heard, 5 years. I've had a lot of guests on the show, and definitely interested in hearing about the current state of franchising and everything you do for it. We appreciate the work you do.
Well, Don, it's a pleasure to be here, and Marty, and congratulations on 5 years.
Thank you.
And I wish you another 5 or 10 or as long as you want to do it.
Thanks so much, Mr. Kelly. We put a lot of thought into who we're going to have on the anniversary show, Steve.
Sure.
And I think this was one of the few that we agreed upon, right, Don? I mean,
right.
This was the first time we said this is perfect. It's been certainly an interesting year in franchising. Our listeners are aspiring entrepreneurs, and we call them franchisepreneurs, Steve, looking to buy a franchise. And I was wondering if you can describe the role of the International Franchise Association.
Sure. Well, the IFA's role is first and foremost to protect, enhance the franchise industry, protect the franchise industry from an advocacy standpoint at both the federal and state level. But we also offer many educational tools and solutions on our website, franchise.org. We have there's a link to Franchising 101 that's sponsored by PepsiCo that is all the do's and don'ts of franchising and essentially Franchising 101. So if you're looking into franchising, you have to do your due diligence. There's
right.
so many different business segments that we represent. There's a lot of opportunities for aspiring entrepreneurs. So I would direct folks to our website where we have a whole plethora of information I think would be helpful to the aspiring franchisee entrepreneur.
Steve, you have quite a resume and background. It's incredible everything you've done. It seemed like you were the perfect person to take over the IFA. How's the last year gone for you?
Well, actually, it'll be a year and a half, December 15th. I've had some unique experiences, working on Capitol Hill, working on campaigns, working for Burson Marsteller, a worldwide PR firm, and, of course, working for two great companies, and PepsiCo and Dunkin' Brands. And actually, while I was at Dunkin' Brands, my last stop before the IFA, I was actually on the board of the IFA, so I was clearly no stranger to the organization. When I was at PepsiCo, I was a strong supplier partner. We were, and they still are. So I think I had a good understanding of franchising, my work at the National Restaurant Association. So it was a very unique opportunity. I clearly had big shoes to fill Matt Shea, my predecessor, who's now at the National Retail Federation, did a tremendous job. And my job, along with that of my team, is to build on the success of the organization over the past 10, 15 years. And I like to say that we're a trade association that fights above our weight class. You know, we're about $13 million in revenue. We have about 40 staff people now. But we're working on the issues that are affecting this industry both today and could have a significant impact down the road. So, you know, first and foremost, it starts with advocacy, a strong media and communications, PR, public relations plan to sort of provide the air cover to promote our industry, advance our goals on Capitol Hill and around the states, and then clearly having strong educational professional development tools through our certification programs so we can have the most professional industry as we continue to grow, even in this bleak, still challenging economic climate. So we're focused on a lot of great priorities right now that we feel have impact for the industry. And the association, quite frankly, is in a strong financial condition. Our ad revenues are up. Membership remains steady, even through the recession. We're building back, we're almost back to pre-recession levels, so that shows we're focused on the right issues. We're providing that member value and ROI that, quite frankly, our members expect and deserve. Our convention this year is up 26% against last year, so we're looking towards 3,000 people in Orlando. Our exhibits are up 5%. We've got a great team. And we're going to continue to focus on the issues that our members are asking us to focus on.
And we appreciate the work you do, Steve. That's you know, our first segment of our show, which is an hour show, is talking about new statistics and information in franchising. I've read so many articles. My background in the last 13 years has been franchise financing. It's also another business
right.
I have. I've read so many articles about how you're appealing to the government, higher-ups, and different trade organizations to assess and improve, to really improve what really is, you know, one of the top problems in franchising, why franchise systems can't grow and why franchisees can't get into the business, and it's the financing. And,
that's right.
So I know I mean, I've read in articles how that's a number one issue, and I know that's where you've applied a lot of time and work towards, and, man, we got to make this happen. It's just ridiculous how lending is arguably worse now than it was a few years ago, trying to get a standard business or SBA loan. It's just outrageous.
Well, you guys are right. So let me take a couple of minutes and sort of wind the tape back a little bit. You know, when I took the job in June of 2010, Ken Walker, who was our chairman at the time, the search committee, the officers, the board, said, Steve, look, you're well-known in food service. Get out there on the road and, you know, meet the other folks and companies, you know, that are on the board, past chairman, key suppliers and sponsors, franchisees, successful multi-unit franchisees, and in a lot of cases multi-concept franchisees as well, and get a pulse of the industry. Well, I hit 56 cities in 4 foreign countries in my first year, and folks would say, Steve, we really appreciate what you guys have done working with the administration, bipartisan members of Congress to get those SBA provisions in the President's Small Business Jobs Act that was passed September of 2010. And within that, we got the loan limit raised from $2 to $5 million. We got the extended loan guarantee from 75% to 90% to mitigate the risk with the banks, try to get them more engaged, and, of course, reduce borrower fees. So that loan limit going from $2 to $5 million was a huge win for us. And so traditionally in the past, as you gentlemen know, the SBA was sometimes seen as the lender of last resort. In this economic, still challenging economic climate with commercial credit drying up through the recession and the economic recovery slower than anticipated, it's been a lifeline for small businesses and especially small franchise businesses. We represent 10% of the dollar volume that the SBA lends and 7% of all SBA loans. So you can see what a critical component that's been. But the members would say, Steve, okay, great, but we still got a 20% lending shortfall, $2 billion, which means 8,000 to 10,000 jobs not created, 8 to 10,000 units not created in 2011, and then 82,000 direct jobs, and then you're talking somewhere between 160 and 200 thousand in indirect jobs. So what we did was we built a coalition. We reached out to our friends at the Consumer Bankers Association that represent, you know, 3/4 of the assets in U.S. banks. We reached out to the National Association of Government Guaranteed Lenders. They represent all the SBA-approved lenders. We reached out to our friends at the Financial Services Roundtable, which represents the top 100 CEOs in the banking industry. And so we, and the National Restaurant Association, which, you know, represents the second largest private sector employer in the United States. So we could better understand, A, that lenders were going through a stricter regulatory environment, borrowers had less collateral, still record high unemployment, and they needed to better understand that franchising was a better bet than non-franchise businesses because we had grown 40% over the last decade. And even through this economic climate, even in 2011, with the lending shortfall, we're still predicted to grow 2.5%. Although I don't think we'll hit that, it'll be somewhat a little less than that, but still better than non-franchise businesses. So
yeah, still great.
We've been on an
economy.
Education campaign.
Yeah. Right.
We've created. We had a small business lending summit in April. Now we have a new web page called smallbusinesslendinghub.com. We've got a lending toolkit. We're mixing and matching lenders with franchisors and franchisees around the country. And we're continuing to put the pressure on, you know, relative to the legislative and regulatory environment around credit access. So a lot going on there, guys. So you're absolutely right. But we're focused on where we need to be focused.
But still a lot of restrictions to overcome with, you know, with lenders having more regulation. You mentioned 90% guarantee was good while it lasted. You know, we have to get things like that back to give lenders more
That's right.
incentive.
That's right.
Have the money to lend. A lot of lenders sell the loans on the secondary market. You know, I think lenders are in better position now to start lending, but they're not. They're still worried about the economy. They still have the regulators on top of them.
That's right.
It's you know, there's still things to overcome, but I mean, you're doing a great job of really getting out there and chiseling away at this. We would just have to keep going.
We have to keep going. Look, and I'll get to a couple of things that the banks have done, but you know, we've met with Marty Gruenberg, who is the vice chair. He's the incoming chair of the FDIC. We've met with his office, Marty, twice now. He spoke at our Small Business Lending Summit. We went with him and his senior team back in the summer, and our lobbyists continue to work with him. But because of the dialogue that we've been having, you know, there are banks now like TD North that are creating a franchise division. Most banks now are looking at and tracking franchise loans within their small business portfolio, or perhaps in the past they didn't. So there's a lot of positive things coming out of the dialogue. But you're right, until we can loosen up commercial credit, we can't realize our vast potential, which is why we're so focused on the issue. We've got new dedicated resources in terms of personnel. The board stepped up, and we put more resources, financial, intellectual capital behind it. And our lobbying team is relentless in its pursuit every day to figure out a way how we can do this, figure out private sector solutions.
Yeah,
so,
there's other types of lending. There's besides just SBA or business
that's
loan,
right.
You know, private investors and other things like leasing and, you know, just, you know,
that's right.
Alternative creative type lending to try to get that person in business or expand. It's frustrating. A person who owns, you know, several franchises of a successful franchise, have a few years in business, they want to get up another one or two. You know, even that type of person in this economy is having trouble.
That's right.
So, yeah, maybe before all this happened, lending was maybe a little, maybe slightly easier than maybe it should have been. Now it's just the opposite, but improving a little bit, and we're just going to have to keep battling. So overall the current state of franchising with, you know, the way things are, I think are, you know, to myself, you know, reading articles and so forth,
mm-hmm.
Is overall pretty positive. I mean, a lot of good things happening in franchising. The number, the percentage of total retail stores in the country being of a franchise capacity, those numbers are going up every year.
Well, you know, we predicted back in January that we'd grow 2.5% in terms of jobs, about 194,000 jobs, 2.5% in terms of units. That was going to be around almost 20,000, then 4.7% in terms of economic output, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of about just under $34 billion. But what we know now, as we're coming in towards the tail end of the year, that GDP's dropped from 3% to 1.5%. You know, there's still a very continued tight credit, as we're talking about. There's low consumer confidence and all this uncertainty about tax reform and what that's going to look like. You know, we run, you know, approximately 80% of our members, you know, run their income through their business. So as LLCs or S-Corps. So, you know, when the Bush-era tax cuts, you know, expire at the end of 2012, there's a lot of tax uncertainty out there for the small business owner to hire and plan for the future. And you look at what health care is going to do to the small business. For it's going to disincentivize people to get above that 50 full-time employee equivalent threshold because either you know have to pay the penalty, throw them into exchange one way or another. It's going to force people to reconfigure the labor model, and there's more people going to go from full-time to part-time. Some people are going to lose jobs. It could impact marginal stores you know, where there's lower margins. So we're looking right now in terms of establishments, you know, heading into the end of the year probably, we're only going to grow as opposed to 2.5 in terms of establishments. We're probably going to look at, you know, 1.25%, so maybe a net 9,000 to 10,000 new units. In terms of jobs, a little bit better, you know, 2.25% against the original forecast to 2.5, so that's net 100,000 jobs. And in terms of output in billions, we'll probably grow 2.35%. So under the 4.7%, but it's still net 16, 17 billion. So if you look at 2009, you wind the tape back, we lost 400,000 jobs as an industry. 2010, we grew 0.3%, essentially flat. This year, you know, we see some positive growth despite the lack of credit. So franchising remains strong and resilient, but clearly we're a long way from pre-recession levels and a long way to realize the vast potential of our industry. But that being said, we're stronger than most. So it's not bleak. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, but it's a 40-watt bulb, and we need to, you know, we need a 100-watt bulb. So we're going to keep driving until that light shines brighter.
I think that's why franchising is getting to be so popular. You mentioned the small business owner. They already have so much against them, Steve, and now this health care bill, which we don't even know all the details of it. Just one more thing to hurt the small business owner. I think a lot of times people are like, well, you know something, franchising – you know, I don't have that learning curve. I can probably be profitable quicker. Can own multiple units, follow a system. I don't know if you heard the first segment of today's show, but we had a couple veterans on, and you know they're perfect for franchising. They're used to just following a system and taking orders, and I think in franchising, and who was it, Marty? I guess it was our friend George Native. About starting on third base and franchising, which is a good, you know, good way to describe it.
Well, before I get into quickly a couple of things we're doing around veterans, which has really garnered a lot of attention lately. Let me just touch upon healthcare for a minute. I mean, you know, without question, we're going to continue to work to repeal and replace this onerous, costly, burdensome healthcare law. You know, we did research. The administration and members of Congress asked us to do research on the impact. That this would have on the franchise industry, and we said, you know, this research that we did would potentially impact 3.2 million jobs and cost us $6.4 billion as an industry, and that doesn't even include the regulatory compliance. So, you know, that's why we're working so hard on two tracks, one to repeal and replace, and the other to take out things like the onerous 1099 reporting provision, the employer mandate, et cetera. And, you know, from an educational standpoint, we continue to do webinars and educational sessions, and we're working on a joint initiative right now with the National Restaurant Association and the National Council of Chain Restaurant Associations, which is part of the National Retail Federation, to better promote our individual and collective organizations and industries as job creators and to make sure that the policymakers understand that they don't place any more burdens unnecessary burdens on small business, especially in this economic climate.
Right.
So, and then as it relates to veterans, you know, we've had a program since 1991 called VetFran that was started in the wake of the Gulf War by Don Dwyer from the Dwyer Group, Mr. Reuter, Glass Doctor, many other companies, and then was revamped after 9/11. And essentially, we've got 440 companies that are engaged now that give financial incentives for veterans coming back into the civilian economy. And that could mean many different things in terms of waiving initial franchise fees, reduced initial franchise fees, equity to get into the game. Because what we know is basically what you said, that veterans are used to structure, operational excellence, and that's what makes franchising so unique and makes it work. And so we have now started up a program under the VetFriend auspices called Operation Enduring Opportunity. And we just committed this past 2 weeks with the First Lady of the United States, Dr. Jill Biden, as well as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce Hiring Our Heroes program and the White House's program, Joining Forces program, that we're going to hire as an industry and recruit 75,000 veterans and 5,000 wounded warriors. And we're already up to 4,000 on that commitment in just 3 weeks. So, you know, we were at the White House. I was at the White House having great honor of representing this industry along with David Nilsen from Guidant Financial and Greg Tanner from Aaron's Rents yesterday when the president signed, you know, the Vow to Hire Heroes tax, Vow to Hire Heroes bill that will give tax credits to employers that hire veterans and disabled veterans coming back home. So a lot of great, great work going on there. And we also have a bill in Congress called Help Our Veterans Own Franchises Act, H.R. 2888 and Senate 1540, introduced by Senator Casey, Democrat from Pennsylvania, and Aaron Schock, Republican congressman from Illinois, and Leonard Boswell, Democratic congressman from Iowa, that will give a tax credit to that veteran franchisee up to 25% of the initial franchise fee and not to exceed $100,000. So that is part of another bill that's being pushed by Senator Marco Rubio, Republican of Florida, and Senator Chris Coons, Democrat from Delaware, called the AGREE Act, which is the American Recovery, Growth, Employer, and Entrepreneurship Act. So there's a lot of things going on. We have a lot of momentum, and there's no shortage of issues, clearly, Marty and Don, to your points earlier about what is going on relative to franchising.
How do you find the time for everything, Steve? I was going to ask you what a typical day is in the shoes of you,
sure.
But I think you just explained it all. I think
it's
tough to find
sure.
the time to do. I guess you have to be a great delegator and have your force to get all this done.
Well, clearly, I think you know the board has been a terrific support for me and my senior team. And look, you hire and surround yourself with the best people. You're right. You have to delegate. You have to be focused on the right issues. You know, a day in my life is you know. Last Monday, I did a press conference with Steve Case, the founder of AOL, Senator Marco Rubio, and Chris Coons in the Senate, relative to this AGREE Act. You know, there are Democrats and Republicans that have already agreed on certain things, and one of those things is, you know, veterans tax credits and our bill that would get more veterans involved in franchising. So we did a press conference. There isn't a day that goes by. I probably don't do 2-3 interviews. There isn't a day that goes by I don't spend quality, serious time with any members of my 6 direct reports or that I speak to board members or I speak to, you know, members out in the field. I travel, keep my ear to the ground, my pulse in the industry. You know, I sit on panels. I give speeches. I give a lot of interviews. You know, I try to raise a lot of money for our PAC. We had a goal. FranPAC, you know, has grown very strongly the last couple of years. We had a goal last year to raise $350,000 for the year. We raised $423,000, which was an all-time record. This year we had a goal of $375,000. We're at over $605,000 with you know, a month to go. Our strategic plan calls for us to become a million-dollar PAC, which would be huge by the 2013-2014 cycle. We're going to break that by the June board meeting. Next year, a full cycle and a half, almost earlier than the plan calls for. And we need that PAC to be strong because we need to support pro-business federal candidates wider and deeper than ever before because we're under assault each and every day. And I think, you know, the industry realizes they got to put more skin in the game. And the more skin in the game we have, the louder the voice we have, the more impact we can have to protect, promote, and enhance this great industry, which is the mission of the IFA.
The last question, Steve, is what advice would you have for our listeners who are buying a franchise? Again, you have a background in franchising, so what would you say to them?
I'd say this is an incredible industry that offers opportunities from the low end in terms of point of entry from a financial standpoint and the various segments all the way up to, you know, higher entry fees depending on what the brands are. But when you think of the depth and breadth of this industry and you think that we like to say, look, with franchising, you're in business for yourself but not by yourself. So when you look at the great marketing support and operational support and training support and leveraging the supply chain efficiencies that are associated with working with a franchisor, I clearly believe, as do many, and I think it is validated by the 40% growth over the last 10 years, that franchising is a pretty solid bet, and it gives you a leg up on non-franchise businesses. So I'd say for a lot of the people that are coming into, you know, into the workforce or that maybe have been downsized out of a group or an organization looking to take more control of your own destiny or just looking for a career change, take a strong look at franchising, because I think, you know, it's all in the metrics and the measurement. And we represent an industry with 825,000 franchise establishments across 300 business lines. We employ nearly 18 million people and over 2.1 trillion economic activity, almost 10% of GDP. This is a great industry that offers incredible opportunity, and it's an industry that gives you an opportunity to control your own destiny, working with proven, iconic brands, and a lot of the new emerging brands offer unique, creative, innovative ideas and opportunities as well. So it's a great industry. I'm excited to lead it. I'm privileged and humbled to lead it, and we're going to continue to keep our eyes on the prize and focus on the issues that are going to move this industry forward.
And there's something for everybody, and a great diverse of people, you know, younger people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I want to thank you again, Steve. You've been a fantastic guest. Don and I think we feel like we know you because we've referenced you probably about 20 times over the last year and a half. So, again, it was a privilege and an honor for us to get the chance to speak with you. And we'd like to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. And we'd love to
Likewise,
have you back.
Likewise, gentlemen. All the best to you and your families. And, again, thanks for having me on and letting me talk about the great work that the IFA and this franchising industry is doing. So I appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you so much, Steve.
No problem.
Take care,
lot,
gentlemen.
Steve.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Wow. Great show, huh, Don?
Yeah, I mean, easily could have done another hour with them. You know, we would love to have, well, I'm sure maybe he'll come on in the future again. It was great hearing from his perspective, you know, what's happening, specific, you know, giving statistics. You know, a lot of good things going on. They're in tough times, but a lot of good things in franchising happening.
It's a challenging job, isn't it? I mean, if you think about it, you know, I mean, it seems like it's, again, it's like that anti-business environment right now, you know? So it's got to be tough for him every day, you know, to stay on top of all the current events and everything that's just going on with taxes and health insurance. And
that's why I said about having the time to do all this. It's quite
exactly.
a job.
But he's definitely the right person for the job, you know? And you know, the franchise.org, we forgot to plug the website. For the International
right.
Franchise Association. So if you go to franchise.org, there's just so much information on that website. I mean, as far as Franchise University, I don't know if you know this, there's a Hall of Fame of Franchising. You've got like Ray Kroc and Dave Thomas. And,
right.
So if you haven't seen that, check it out. It really is fantastic. So
I want to talk about the trade show coming up in New York City.
Yeah,
ISC's
going
to be in Chicago.
It's
going
to be like the first time,
New York.
Right? Right.
First,
well, it's
right.
nice for us, isn't it? That it's fairly close. You know?
Right.
So,
yeah.
Good for us. So, well done, Don. You know, had a great show today. It's a two-hour show, so just fantastic.
Our
I want to thank all of our listeners.
Yeah.
255 years. You know, thank you, everyone, for listening for the show and making it such a success. I don't think you and I thought we would be doing it this long, you know. So it really is
right.
a privilege to be doing it. So here's for another 5 years. So well done, job. Good. Good job.
Same to you.
Have a great day, everyone, and happy Thanksgiving. Take care, everyone.